The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
News. Trump's tour started in Saudi Arabia, where he signed a new arms deal with that Gulf nation before travelling onwards towards Qatar. We'll get the latest and full analysis of that trip shortly with Lorcan Nyan. But before Donald Trump left Saudi Arabia yesterday, he spoke at a roundtable with Middle Eastern leaders. The remarks were mostly scripted, thanks and comments on the region generally, but also included some off-script moments like this one.
Bad things happened in that election. And I said, let's do it again. And by doing it again, it became much more historic. It's a much more historic election, much more powerful election. And we have a mandate. We won every swing state. We won by millions of votes. We won 2,750 districts. We call them districts out of a total, if you look at the number, it was 2,750 to 505. The whole map was red, red meaning Republican. We have a mandate from the American people, the likes of which people haven't seen for 129 years. They say it was the most consequential election in America in 129 years. So that sounds like a long time, so we'll take that. But in the future, we'll continue that progress by adding more countries to the Abraham Accords. We have the four, and they're going to be filling up very rapidly. Biden didn't do anything because he never did anything about anything. He had no capability, he had no ability, and it was a shame what he's done to so many countries, including our own. We had an interesting fact about a year ago. There was a story that we're having a hard time getting enlistments into the military. And it was at the lowest level almost ever. People didn't want to go into our military. And it just came out last week. You probably saw that we have now the strongest enlistment in the history of our country. They say 38 years. One said 37, one said 32, and one said ever. So we just had the strongest enlistment in the history of the United States of America. So think of it. In 1 year, we went from they can't get people to enlist to we have the strongest enlistment.
So, first of all, a little lecture on Trump's election victory for his Middle Eastern friends, while also claiming he's responsible for an uptick in military enlistments, which, surprise, surprise, is actually false. Military enlistments did fall during COVID and its aftermath, but had started to rise again before Trump's re-election. Military enlistment was 12.5% higher in the fiscal year 2024 when Biden was in charge. So that's another little fib from Donald Trump. Speaking a little later, he had this to say about Gaza.
In Gaza, my administration shares the hope of so many in this region for future of safety and dignity of the Palestinian people. But that cannot happen as long as Gaza's leaders take delight in raping, torturing and murdering innocent people. Can't have it. I greatly appreciate the constructive role that the leaders in this room have played in trying to bring the terrible conflict to an end, including by helping secure the release of American hostage Idan Alexander.
So thanking the leaders for their part in releasing the American Israeli hostage Idan Alexander, and maybe a little softer language on Gaza compared to a few months ago when he wanted to clear the enclave out completely. So for the latest on his Middle East trip and lots more news from the United States, we have Lorcan Nyan, head of training at the Communications Clinic and columnist with the Sunday Independent. Good morning, Lorcan.
Morning.
He also complimented himself and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman on how handsome they were.
Yeah, Donald Trump is kind of consistently enamoured by how handsome the people in front of him are, comparing them to himself. He refers to people out of central casting, and it does seem to impact his decision. So, I mean, like, he has now lifted the sanctions on Syria, a huge global moment, a moment to be welcomed. But in many ways, it was done because he thought the new leader of Syria was
young, handsome guy.
Young, handsome guy, very brave, a tough guy
and
as well.
This is a guy who was on the terror list of the United States.
Yeah, a 10 million million price on his head. You know, fought for Al Qaeda in Iraq, and that move is to be welcomed. I think the remove of the sanctions to give Syria that chance to bring it back, yeah. And he has done phenomenal work. But it's this obsession with optics, with being impressed by the look of the person right in front of him. That is always interesting.
Before we leave Syria, just on CNN last night, Donald Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton, former ambassador to the UN, he was asked about the lifting of those sanctions on Syria. And this is what he said to Anderson Cooper.
Well, I don't understand why it's being done this way. Al-Sharaf, formerly Al-Jalani, his nom de guerre when he was an al-Nusra terrorist, may have trimmed his beard, he may have ditched his combat fatigues for a coat and tie, he's got good PR advice, but he has yet to take steps that I think are convincing to us that he's no longer a terrorist. I will say that Trump did tell him to try and sign an Abraham Accord recognition of Israel and take other steps against terrorists. But A, that's not enough. We should ask for more, not just rhetoric from this tough guy, but actual performance. Trump didn't ask for it, and he didn't ask for the other commitments before he gave up the sanctions. That's not the art of the deal to me. Now, maybe something has happened behind the scenes we don't know about, but if the Syrian government wanted the sanctions released, they should have at least committed to not just combating terrorism or recognizing Israel, but providing a full, total, complete evaluation of what the Assad regime did with American hostages and other foreign hostages. They should open up their facilities for inspection by the U.S. or international authorities on the Assad regime's chemical weapons operations and biological weapons efforts to make sure none of that is still going on. And frankly, they should kick the Russians out of the TARDIS naval base and the air base nearby in Latakia province.
So lots the Americans could have asked for. Instead, they lift the sanctions and get no quid pro quo.
And I suppose what John Bolton is verbalising there is very much the conservative position, what has been the conservative position for quite some time. And it really speaks to how Donald Trump, he can be very, very hard to pin down on the classic left-right ideological divide, because number one, he changes his mind so often, and number two, he's so instinctive in what he does, and it can very often just decide on how he feels that day. I mean, he gave a speech yesterday where he talked to the Arab nations about no longer in lecturing them on how to live, about how so-called nation builders actually ruined nations, how interventionists intervened when they didn't know what they were talking about, and telling people to own their own destiny, and we can't look at the morals of foreign leaders anymore. That is a stunning reversal of American foreign policy on two levels. Number one, it's you know, anti the Iraq war. It's anti their interventionist culture. If Bernie Sanders have given it, you would have said, yeah, that's classic Bernie Sanders language on foreign policy. But he also wrote back on America's moral position in the world. He basically said, we have no moral leadership anymore. It's up to yourselves. Follow your own destiny. Who are we to look into your eyes, be you a dictator, an autocrat, or whatever else, and tell you who you should be? So it's like isolationist. Plus, it's genuinely really, really, really monumental what he said in that speech. But it is the opposite of conservative doctrine, the opposite of Republican foreign policy, the opposite of a Reagan or a Bush on two different ends of the conservative scale. So, I mean, significant statements. But then, yes, on the deal making, he does seem to have just said, I've been asked to do this for Syria. I think that this guy's a good guy. Let's give them a chance to get up off the mat.
Asked by Mohammed bin Salman, number one. So he wanted a recognition of Syria. And of course, he's saying, I'm buying billions and billions, hundreds of billions of arms from you guys. I want something in return. And what I want is for Syria.
And
he grants it.
And he grants it. He rolls with it. And I think another interesting thing, you said he softened his language there on Palestine, and he has. Israel, apparently, based on a report in Israeli media, did not want him to lift the sanctions on Syria. You know, they are still, you know, bombing elements of Syria. They do not want those sanctions lifted. He also didn't liaise with them on the release of the hostage, didn't tell them about it. He's also not visiting on this trip, and he's visiting all of the Arab nations. I mean, there's clearly been an element of a breakdown in that relationship, or at least a deprioritization of that relationship right now with Donald Trump, which is significant long term.
I mean, it could be the simple optics. He doesn't want to be associated with anything that is bad news. And obviously, the likelihood that Israel will really go hard in on Gaza. And we heard yesterday about what Israel is doing on the West Bank. So He just doesn't want any part of that. Keep his hands clean.
Yeah, doesn't want to be connected to it. And yet, look, I suppose I know it is crumbs, but you take the crumbs when you can get them in these foreign policy situations, that at least he's not actively tying himself to it in the way that he was.
Now the jet, the Boeing, the $400 million plus Boeing, almost $500 million of a gift. I saw a Qatari spokesperson saying this was a government-to-government deal, not a person-to-person deal.
Yeah, which has become the official line, because they could not donate it directly to Donald Trump, this plane. They have to donate it to the Department of Defense. The Department of Defense own it, and then the Department of Defense, once Trump is done, are going to give it to the Trump Library, the Trump Archive, not to Trump himself. That is the official story. That is what's happening. It's an interesting story all the way through. Donald Trump obviously loves luxury, loves the appearance of luxury anyway, or what he would see as luxury. Air Force One was pretty broken down and rattled. It's a relatively old plane. Donald Trump hated it, got it replaced, but because of delays in production with Boeing, the replacement wasn't going to come for a number of years. He saw this jet when it landed in America. He really liked it. And then lo and behold, the Qataris decided that, yeah, you can have it for Air Force One.
If he was any expert on the art of the deal, he would know there's no such thing as a free lunch or a free Boeing.
And there's definitely no such thing as the appearance anyway. You know, there's anybody looking at it would be saying, well, they must be getting something from you. There must be some quid pro quo here.
I mean, the venality of the Trump regime, the kleptocracy really that is going on, it is beginning to gall more than just Democrats.
Very much so. And this plane, the right wing, the MAGA influencer sphere were very anti this. Anti it, maybe not so much on the charges of corruption or the appearance of corruption around it, but angry because Qatar support Hamas, or they would suggest that Qatar support Hamas, and so therefore they would see them on the side that they don't want to be on, and then also on national security concerns. Even Ted Cruz, the Republican, you know, was saying there would be security concerns, espionage concerns around taking this plane and using it for Air Force One. So Trump is kind of annoying all sides all at once, and yet, as usual, kind of getting away with it. And you played John Bolton earlier on. There is a fascinating insight from John Bolton Bolton recently. People will have seen that Trump is taking in what he calls refugees from South Africa, white Africans.
So bizarre.
An absolutely bizarre thing to be doing, to publicly say that there's a genocide there, that, you know, it's total misinformation, disinformation going on. He was obsessed with that, because Arnold Palmer, the golfer, apparently said it to him and said, this is happening. It stuck in Trump's head. He was obsessed with it in his first term. And John Bolton said, yeah, he used to bring it up and we kind of just smile and move on because it was a bizarre idea.
Yeah.
But now in the second term, he brings it up and there's nobody there to say, what are you talking about, Mr. President? Of course we are not doing that. So he has carte blanche to do whatever appears to him, whatever grievance he has, which is why this term is so much more bizarre than the first one.
Now, let's talk about Joe Biden and the Jake Tapper book, which is about to come out in the United States. No doubt it'll follow here swiftly thereafter. And there have been some leaks from the book.
Fascinating book called The Original Sin. And it's looking at what they call the Democratic cover-up of Joe Biden's aging through the time in the White House. A couple of the highlights coming from it was that they discussed, would he need a wheelchair in his second term? Such was his physical deterioration, the changes they had to make to his schedule because of the physical deterioration. An in-depth kind of description of how at a fundraiser, Joe Biden met George Clooney, one of the most recognisable faces and who Joe Biden knew quite well, and didn't know who he was, had to be reminded, you know George, Joe, you know who George is, had to be reminded, which led to the George Clooney op-ed. Ideas that, you know, he didn't know aides who he'd known since the 1980s and would forget their names. But I think maybe the two most interesting revelations from it is that some of this was happening in 2020. So there was the old Joe Biden moments from 2020. They got worse, yes, as it went on. But that's a long time for people close to him to have seen him forget names, serious things like that, and to still let him run again.
So will we get to the bottom of why he persisted in running? Because those close to him, including his wife Jill, would know more than everybody as to his cognitive decline. And yet no one close to him was able to say to him, look, Joe, you know, your time is up.
The best justification or description that we seem to get is that they just felt Joe Biden was discounted wrongly so often in his career that they had this unhinged, really, view that he'd always come back. Everybody was always wrong about him and therefore he'd be fine again. And even Joe Biden, not as good as he used to be, was better than the alternatives. And there's a story in the book that Joe Biden woke up the day after the election still saying, if I'd stayed in it, I would have won. So, you know, even after it all, he still believed that he would have won that election, which, I mean, like, he would have lost by an absolute landslide. There would have been new swing states brought in there that he would have lost. I mean, that was very, very clear. But, you know, Obama's former chief of staff, again, according to this book, did go to Gavin Newsom, did go to other figures and say, will you challenge? Will you run? Yeah. And they all said no, is why we're not going to get the true story, because Democrats don't have an answer to why they let this happen.
Now, we saw Donald Trump falling asleep at the Pope's funeral. We saw Donald Trump falling asleep in Saudi Arabia. And, you know, you think if that had happened with Biden, and Biden was chipper at the Pope's funeral, saying hello to everybody and full of life, maybe getting a good night's sleep. I don't know what it was, but it contrasted very significantly with Trump. So I want you to have a close listen to this, how Fox News is reacting to some presidential ramblings.
We just announced a new nominee for the U.S. Surgeon General who never finished her residency and is not a practicing physician. So can you explain why you picked her to be America's top doctor?
Because Bobby thought she was fantastic. I don't know her.
This president doesn't know what he's doing and he blames somebody else.
Is the administration sending migrants to Libya?
I don't know. You'll have to ask Homeland Security, please.
Americans are watching all this and they're wondering who's really running the country.
Mr. President, your reaction to the story in The Atlantic that said that some of your top cabinet officials and aides had been discussing very sensitive material. You say, well,
I don't know anything about it.
If he doesn't know, there's a level of ignorance that frankly is unforgivable for a U.S. president.
Do you still believe nothing classified was shared?
Well, that's what I've heard. I don't know. I'm not sure. You have to ask the various people involved. I really don't know.
If he doesn't know that, the people around him are derelict in their duty. Here's what I think. I think the man is clueless.
So last-minute Biden era regulation that hits ordinary Americans hard.
And what did they do?
He just happens to be sitting there signing stuff that they stick in front of him.
What's this one?
That's unleashing American energy, sir.
And signed executive orders that he probably didn't even know what he was signing.
They haven't heard about that. They probably want to keep it from me.
Maybe the people who are actually running the country haven't told him.
I haven't heard that. I know nothing about it. I didn't know anything about it. I don't know anything about it.
He has no idea. The guy is not fit to be president.
Okay, so that's Fox News talking about presidential ignorance or lack of knowledge or understanding or even power. But what happened there was that's a compilation of things Fox said about Biden.
And I mean, look at this.
And yet there we have Trump doing exactly the same kind of thing. And Fox think that he walks on air.
But look, the double standard is well known. The double standard is well established. I mean, you can do most things that Donald Trump says. And just imagine if Obama had done this. Imagine if Joe Biden had done this. And obviously the reaction would be completely different. But Trump is judged by totally different standards. He's a very, you know, totally different standards by everybody. Not just by voters as well. Like, he's not held to a moral standing at all. He's held to a very specific brand of, you know, is he winning? You know, is he being dominant? And if he is, people tend to let him away.
Can he make it through 4 years of cognitive decline and persist?
I think so, provided the appearance remains strong. Guy, if he still appears relatively healthy, appears relatively strong, that the energy and the voice maintains. Because it's not as if, you know, you played a clip earlier on, it's not as if, you know, he is always absolutely clear and concise. It's not as if, you know, ramblings make a big difference. He's made these mistakes for years and years and years. They won't impact him. One of the big things that happened with Biden is just his physical health went, the physical strength in his voice went, he shuffled, you know, and so therefore he looked old as well as having some of those mental lapses, which is one of the big reasons why it stuck to him.
Now, we talked about the kind of things that Trump is doing to dismantle the American establishment, I suppose, challenging even the Supreme Court by ignoring the order to facilitate the release of Garcia. But then we have a Judge Hannah C. Dugan in Wisconsin being indicted by a federal grand jury for facilitating a guy walking out of her courtroom. I mean, this is pretty serious stuff.
Very, very, very serious stuff. And I think there's so much going on in America. There's so much news and news and news. We have to just look for the ones that are symbolic of a trend or symbolic of a wider impact. And I think this is one of those stories. So basically, the story was there was a man in front of our court. ICE, the enforcement, are outside because they wanted to deport him. And instead of putting him through the front door, she let him out the back door. And they're saying that helped him evade. Now, they caught him ultimately, but that it was an attempt to help evade federal enforcement. And therefore, their argument is, even if you're a judge, nobody is above our new laws. And so it is symbolic of their disdain now for the judiciary in many ways, and also symbolic of how serious they are about this new crackdown, as they would call it, on immigration. And those numbers are going to start rising. They are going to follow through on that. It's also interesting in that the legal argument this judge is using is almost entirely based off of the Supreme Court judgment about Trump and Trump, having the not being able to be prosecuted afterwards for a federal one. She's using Trump's own judgment to say, I have judicial immunity here because what I was doing was acting as a judge. So it'll be interesting to see if that works, because the courts have held in a way I didn't think they would. You know, both the Supreme Court to a degree, but and the lower courts have held against Trump stronger than I thought they would, given how many of his judges he got put in there in the first term.
Now, we're going to move on to the Sean Combs trial, and a warning that this is not suitable for little ears. It contains references to sexual assault, rape and violence. This trial is fascinating America.
Fascinating America, gripping American media. I mean, a series of high-profile trials. It is a country of high-profile trials, and this is now going to be kind of in that pantheon of high-profile trials. Brutal, horrific. We had day three of the trial yesterday. So Sean Combs has been charged with sex trafficking and racketeering. And he had his former partner of 10 years, Cassie Ventura, who was the star witness for the prosecution. She had previously settled a civil suit that kind of kicked off a lot of this story. People will maybe have seen that there is CNN leaked footage of from her surveillance camera of a very vicious assault by Combs on his partner of the time. So there is visual representation of it. She went on to talk in detail about some of the things that were done. They're called freak off, where it was voyeurism, where he would bring in male prostitutes with his then partner. There, 10 bottles of baby oil being used to be glistening. Horrible things done to this woman who felt unsafe. Became basically, she felt her full-time profession was to be in these kind of drug-fueled orgies as he watched or took part. The defence of Combs, his defence attorneys are basically saying he was abusive.
Yeah, they're saying he's a swinger, really. They're
acknowledging
colourful.
The domestic violence, but they're then saying that he was a swinger. This was all consensual. None of this means racketeering and sex trafficking. And I suppose that's the case the prosecution need to make, which is that it did involve the trafficking of prostitutes and it did involve that it was racketeering.
Because this set of charges, and if he is acquitted on these, there might be other charges that could be brought. He's not charged with assault, rape or blackmail. He is accused of sex trafficking and racketeering and transporting people for prostitution. They are the charges.
They're the charges. So, I mean, a lot of the testimony, look, and you don't need to go into the specifics of it, I don't think, but people can find themselves, is truly shocking. But the argument throughout it all will be, well, are they making the case of sex trafficking and racketeering as it goes along? But look, this is going to go on and on as a trial. And regardless of what the ultimate outcome is, I think that people will be shocked by the details within it.
Lorcan Nyhan, Head of Training at the Communications Clinic and Sunday Independent columnist, thank you very much for joining us. And by the way, if you've been affected by anything in the latter part of our conversation, help is available. You can contact the Samaritans on 116123 or the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre on 1-800-7788.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.